This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
From the Quicken Loan Studios in Houston, Texas. Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today. Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
And a very good evening. Welcome into the fastest 2 hours in radio at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Before we get underway tonight, we want to connect with you. Join us at Twitter at eRadio Sports. You can always, throughout the 2 hours, send us, fire off an email. That is info at eradiosports.com, and twice is nice. You can always go back and listen to each and every interview at podcastarena.com. Well, it's true. We are inside the Quicken Loans studios, and we're going to hit on a number of subjects. First and foremost, the 2017 NFL Draft, it is in the rearview mirror, and it's in the books, and we wanted to catch up with one of the Big E favorites. That is OU Insider. He is the senior writer with OU Insider. That is James Hale, to get his thoughts on how things turned out ultimately for Oklahoma, for our Sooners. Good to have you back with us tonight, James.
It's always great to be with you. It is a disappointment, though, that for some reason I just can't get your beautiful face. And I know you're wearing something beautiful and sexy, but I can't get it in front of me. But hey, I'll just have to visualize, and everything's good. But it's always great to be on.
Well, James, all I have to say is it's Mother's Day weekend, and I cannot think of a better way to kick off my program tonight than talking to one of my very best friends, and that is James Hale. So
it's going to be interesting. Will your kids take you golfing, or will they actually take you to some place to eat?
Well, actually, I've got caddy duties. I will be at Horseshoe Bay in a two-day tournament for
there
Eli.
You go.
But you know
That's what?
What
I thought,
James.
What I thought.
Yeah, I wouldn't have it any other way. It's amazing. I get to burn fat, and I also get to, you know, spend time with the family, and family's first, so it's all good. Okay, so let's move ahead. Let's talk about the Oklahoma Sooners. Let's talk about Joe Mixon. He was selected by the Bengals, 16th pick in the second round. He's extremely potent and versatile offensively. What kind of transition do you think that he's going to have, and how do you see him working out with the Bengals?
Well, I think if everybody leaves him alone, he'll be great. You know, Joe was, you know, after his incident, he was really a really good student-athlete at the University of Oklahoma. Now, some people don't want to talk about moving forward, or they don't want to talk about, you know, that actually the giving him a second chance actually worked at OU, because here you've got a young man that excelled as a student-athlete at OU. He did have one incident that everybody wants to talk about when he got mad at a traffic officer and tore up the ticket and threw it in her face. If that had been Samaje Perine that did that, he'd have been suspended for a quarter. Because it was Joe Mixon, he got suspended for a game. But, you know, so everybody that doesn't know him wants to make something out of that, oh, he's got anger issues, or he's got this and that. Joe is a young man that is a long way from home, that's dealing with a lot of things. But one thing that he wasn't was a problem on that football team, and was never a problem as a student-athlete, was eligible and everything else. So the Bengals, one thing about him, he's a great football player. I mean, his ability to do a number of different things on a football field for you is really something to see. If he didn't have this incident, he would have been a first-round draft choice, because he's a better blocker than – the only guy that's a better blocker than him is Samaje Perine. He's a tremendous pass receiver. You know, he can line up and actually run as a pass receiver with you.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got all these particular assets. He's proven he can run between the tackles. He has good speed. He'd have been a first-round draft choice. As it is, he goes in the second round, and he goes to, you know, Cincinnati, that's dealt with athletes that have some off-the-field issues before. I personally think that's a good place for Joe to go. They know how to mentor him, talk to him, tell him what he's going to expect. They know what they are going to expect. And the bottom line is they get a really good football player that I think is going to have a great NFL career. And I think he'll prove to everybody that he made one instantaneous bad mistake. He's not going to make another one. And I think he'll have a long, productive NFL career.
The senior writer with OU Insider, you can also check him out at 1400 KREF, 10 to 2. Central Time. That is on Total Sports is the title of his show. James Hale is back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show, getting us up to speed on all the transactions that took place in this year's NFL draft. So as we zero in on the Sooners, Joe Mixon, he truly is. He is an exceptional talent. James, you have interacted with him. You've interviewed him many, many times. Do you get a sense, give our listeners, give us a sense of comfort that he is a changed man, that he has humbled himself, that he is maturing, he's growing. And talk to me about who's mentoring him, who is helping him step up to make better choices.
Well, I was around him a lot, actually, since that incident. I covered him in recruiting, so I got to know him in recruiting. I got to know his coach. I got to know his mom. I got to know him. This incident happened right before the start of training camp. He gets suspended. Well, even when he was suspended, I ran into him three or four times out and about. He was always polite to me. He was always courteous to me. And then when he got reinstated to the football team, then he was, you know, he wasn't subject, you know, they didn't let him talk to the media, which I really think is a mistake, whether it was his attorneys that did that or it was OU's decision. You know, he didn't talk to the, you know, he didn't talk to the media, and I think he should have. His mentors would be Cale Gundy, who's the running back coach at OU, who recruited him, and Lincoln Riley, who was the offensive coordinator, his high school football coach, his preacher back home. His mother's a very strong influence in his life. I understand that his dad was involved with him after he graduated. I never met his dad. I've never talked to his dad, so I don't know anything about that. But as I've always thought about Joe, that he made this big mistake, and it's, you know, hey, you can't do that, and he made a mistake. If you know about the situation and what happened, you might have three or four different thoughts about this situation, but there was never a question that Joe wasn't a good individual. He's not the first guy that's made a poor decision. And, you know, and he proved that at OU. You know, he never got a personal foul penalty, as far as I know, at OU. And, you know, he's at Pro Day, he was very nice. When he finally had a chance to talk to the media, I thought he did a good job. When he talked to the media at Media Day, now he's gone on a few shows. I think he's very humbled by the incident. I think he wishes it didn't happen. He and Mia Molitor, the young lady that he struck, they've had a conversation. They both say they shouldn't have been in that spot. They wish they had not been there, and they both admit they made mistakes. Joe takes full responsibility for this. So I'm not sure what else Joe can do. Mm-hmm. If anybody deserves a second chance, it's Joe. He hasn't done anything close to remotely to this again. So hopefully people will start forgiving him and people will start to realize that Joe is a good citizen.
Just a few more minutes with senior writer from OU Insider. That is James Hale, simply the best in the business, breaking it all down, talking about the Oklahoma Sooners as we zero in on Joe Mixon. What's remarkable, too, James, is the expectations for him in the NFL are very high. I'm seeing some reports saying that they're ranking him as one of the top seven offensive rookies in 2017.
Well, he's prolific. You know, I know Cincinnati, you know, they don't really have a running back that I would say is a bell cow or somebody that, you know, is getting ready to be a superstar. Joe's got that kind of ability. He can be a superstar for you. But he's very humbled. I mean, he shared the position with P. Ryan, and P. Ryan's the all-time leading rusher at OU. He never made bones about not playing more. He never complained. You know, and he knows exactly – all he wants to do is win, and he'll do anything he can win. That's why when he became a better blocker, that was because he knew he needed to do that, because OU was going to throw the football half the time. And he became a very good pass blocker. Now, he's not as good as Samaje. Samaje will literally knock defensive ends off their, de-cleat them, and then stand over them like a lineman and laugh at them, kind of. I've never seen a running back block like Samaje does. You know, but they both are going to be really, really good in the National Football League, and I think Joe's got a chance to be one of the better players in the league. And don't bet against Samaje either. Samaje, there's always been doubts about him coming out of high school. He had a torn ACL or had to rehab a torn ACL. He was the second running back, more or less, because Joe Mixon was in the class.
Mm-hmm.
And man, he turned out to be the best running back in OU history statistically. So Don't bet against him. He's a really good all-around back as well.
Never enough time. Senior writer with OU Insider James Hale has been with us. James, we got to have you back in 2 weeks because there's so much more that we did not get into, and we'll just talk to you in a couple of weeks. And tell all of our listeners where they can check you out and the OU Insider.
OUinsider.com, a member of the 24/7 Sports Network. I'm on SportsTalk1400.com Monday through Friday from 11 to 2. And Jay Hale, 24, on Twitter. Thanks, E. Love you, and have a great Mother's Day, E.
Thank you so much. Love you, James. We'll talk to you real soon. Thanks. Stick around. Much more coming your way at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, and the Big E Sports Show on this Friday night. We opened up our show talking some Big 12 football. Well, right now, we're going to shift gears. I'm looking so forward to our next conversation because it will be fascinating. How about this? A new Olympics reality. Fewer cities want to host the games. So why is that? In hour number one, we're going to take time for a book review. It is titled No Boston Olympics, How and Why Smart Cities Are Passing on the Torch. And we are so honored to have with us in the Quicken Loans studios, that is co-authors Chris Dempsey and Andrew Zimbalist. Good evening, gentlemen, and thank you so much for the time.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Alyssa.
Okay, so Andrew, I'm going to open up with you. Let's start with you, because when I think of Boston, I would think it would be the perfect venue to host the Olympics in 2024. So talk to me about why our city's passing on the torch, the city of Boston. It is amazing. It's striking, and it has so much to offer. And I would think, I'm a television gal, that it would be stunning for live TV.
Yeah, well, maybe for live TV. The question is whether it'd be stunning for Boston or not.
Okay.
So what we're finding, and this predated Boston, if you go back to 2015, the IOC was awarding the games for the 2022 Winter Olympics, and five different European cities dropped out, leaving the IOC with a choice between Almaty, Kazakhstan, and Beijing, China. And something very similar happened now with the 2024 Summer Olympics, because you had Boston drop out, you had Budapest drop out, Rome drop out, Hamburg dropped out, Toronto almost entered a bid, and they dropped out. So it's very clear that there's a trend here that cities are looking at the economic reality of hosting and saying it's not worth it. Generally speaking, What it entails is an expense of about $15 to $20 billion. You have to use up somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 acres of land to accommodate the 36 venues for the Summer Olympics, and also the International Broadcasting and Media Center, and the Olympic Village, and all of the infrastructure that's connected to it. So it's an enormous expense and an enormous distraction of resources. And the amount of money you get back after investing $15 to $20 billion is on the order of $4 or $5 billion. So that's not a very good financial balance. Cities are realizing that the old promises about being on international television and it generating more tourism, foreign investment, and trade haven't come to pass. And instead, cities are left with what are called white elephants, sports facilities that they can't use economically going forward.
Well, let's let Chris jump in here, because you were the front guy, you were the front man for the opposition, and that this really, yes, perhaps it could be lucrative, but it really ultimately would be disastrous for a host city. Can you kind of expound on that?
Yeah, that's the way we felt. You know, you said earlier on that Boston looks great on television, and it does. The reality is that's why the United States Olympic Committee chose Boston as its number one choice for the 2024 games, because we do look good on television, and the Olympics are ultimately a television event. But the reality for people on the ground is very different. And the most important detail here is that the International Olympic Committee requires the mayor of the host city to sign a contract that says the host city taxpayers are responsible for the cost overruns and any deficit that the games creates. So that means when you go through that math that Andy just talked about, $15 to $20 billion in cost and only $5 billion in revenue,
wow,
it's actually not a lucrative opportunity. It's a big waste of dollars.
Yeah, you got to see the big picture. Hey, you're listening to the voice of Chris Dempsey. Also, Andrew Zimbalist. They teamed up. They are co-authors of the new book. You got to go out and get a copy of it. It is titled No Boston Olympics, How and Why Smart Cities Are Passing on the Torch. So, Andrew, jump in here. Talk to us about the IOC process and the preparation that goes into pulling off a massive event like the Olympics?
No, the IOC is an international monopoly. It's the only organization that organizes the Olympics. And, of course, they're producing a product that's enormously popular. So their business model, historically, was to go out to the cities of the world and say, bid against each other, and we'll select the city that offers the most attractive package.
Mm-hmm. So, Chris, talk to me about, as far as the goal of this book, No Boston Olympics. When you and Andrew teamed up on this, what do you want the reader to know?
I think it's sort of two things. One is it's really a mini history of what happened in Boston from 2013 to 2015 as the bid was produced and the USOC chose Boston, and then Bostonians sort of soured on the idea. So there'll be a lot of names in there that people will recognize, people like Mitt Romney and Bob Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, both of whom were supporters of the bid. It's the story of really these very powerful and wealthy people coming together to push the bid, while at the same time regular citizens were opposing it. And Boston 2024 spent about $15 million to push this bid. On our side, we spent less than $10,000. So it was very much a David versus Goliath story, and that's what comes across in the book. But I think just as importantly, this book puts Boston in the context of all these other cities that are starting to say no. And in fact, we're really proud as Bostonians that those cities that Andy mentioned, Budapest, Hungary, Rome, Italy, and Hamburg, Germany, have all said no. And the leaders in those cities have all pointed to Boston, and they said, Boston made a smart choice by rejecting the IOC, and we're going to do the same thing. So it's another another story in the long history of Boston sort of leading the way for other cities around the world and being smart and kind of seeing what this would mean for our citizens and deciding to go in a different direction.
You know, Chris and Andrew, you guys can exhale because the book has a happy ending, right? Because you accomplished your goal. And in the end, Boston was able to reclaim the right to chart their own cities without the costly demands and requirements of the IOC's 17-day extravaganza, correct?
That's exactly right. So over the course of 2015, support actually started out pretty high, where Bostonians supported the bid about 55% and only about 35% were opposed. But as Bostonians learned more about what this would mean for their neighborhoods and their communities and their pocketbooks, they really decided that this just wasn't the right future. And so by the time we got to March and April, support had dropped to about 35% and opposition was now over 50%. And the United States Olympic Committee saw that and they realized that they weren't going to be able to successfully pull off the games and force Bostonians to sort of bend the future plans of their city toward the games. And so at that point, they basically decided to pull out. They took some time, and then they decided to give the bid to Los Angeles. So people that are following this now will probably know that Los Angeles is in the running for the 2024 Olympics, and that's really a result of Bostonians first having that opportunity, but deciding that it just wasn't worth it.
And it's incredible, too, just to think of this grassroots effort and support and how you guys were able to pull that off.
Yeah, so we were just regular citizens. In fact, we formed our group in a living room in a small apartment just in downtown Boston.
Oh, my goodness.
And it grew from there, from three people meeting in a living room to thousands and tens of thousands of Massachusetts residents who would make small contributions. Our average contribution size was about $100 compared to that to Boston 2024, whose average contribution size was about $45,000. But we had the facts on our side, and we had a media and a press that was willing to tell both sides of the story, so that every time Boston 2024 put out a press release about how great the games would be, the media and the press would come to us and they'd say, well, what's the other side of the story? And we'd show them academic articles that show that actually the games usually left cities much worse off.
Well, Chris, a job well done. I congratulate you. And I know, Andrew, I think the call dropped, but we wanted to encourage all of our listeners tonight across the country, go out and get a copy of the book, Chris Dempsey and Andrew Zimbalist. Their new book, they teamed up, No Boston Olympics, How and Why Smart Cities Are Passing on the Torch. We look forward to staying in touch with you and having you back on the program. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks. It was great to be on.
Absolutely. Much more coming your way right here in hour number one at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. That's right. We're getting ready to tee it up as we are getting ready and set to talk about the Players Championship with Larry Miller.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker Campbell, welcome back to SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. In our next segment, it is time, always look forward to this segment, we are going to go inside the ropes with PGA professional and author, the great Larry Miller. Mr. Larry Miller joins us each and every week right here on our network, the next generation of sports radio, to give us the latest on the PGA Tour news and notes, and also on his new book that he has just released, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. Good evening, Larry. It's nice to have you back.
Well, good afternoon. Yeah, good evening to you, too, and to your all the golfers out there.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we've got a number of subjects that we're going to get into. But first and foremost, I actually, Larry, I want to reflect on last week and Dustin Johnson in the Wells Fargo Championship. It was, I just have to say, it was so good to see him back in his first competitive round since hurting his back on the eve of the Masters. And he is certainly, you know, watching him, he's come a long way after slipping, you know, down those stairs and badly bruising his back. What were your takeaways after watching him in the Wells Fargo Championship? And, I mean, gosh, he settles what he tied for second.
Well, if not for the 75 he shot in the second round, he would have walked away with the tournament, which is pretty impressive considering the guy, you know, he had to skip the Masters, had to be despondent over that, not to mention the physical ills, you know, of getting bruised up and banged up and, you know. So, you know, well, you know what, though? He's in such tremendous physical shape. His workout regimen is intense. And the guy, he can bounce back probably quicker than most people because of that. But still, he's just a phenomenal athlete. And I think he just put an exclamation point on why he's currently number one in the world by being able to, you know, come back from that, shoot a 75, and still finish second.
Yeah, and what I hear you saying is that, you know, he really did look like the world's top-ranked golfer, and I certainly thought so on those final nine holes.
Yeah, his if you want to take a look sometime, your listeners out there, at his you could Google his workout routine, and it's amazing. It's very intense, and the guy, you know, he can do things. I saw a video of him jumping out of 4 feet of water in a pool, jumping onto the side, sprang up. And now you can't even do that without water. And he did it out of 4 feet of water. I mean, his legs, his core is so strong. And that's one reason he can carry it, you know, 330 yards, too.
You know, it's amazing, too, the years that you were on the PGA Tour, just how much that physical training off the course, how much it has changed in terms of nutrition, diet, but also the exercise.
You know, it has. And, you know, back when I played and even before I played, it wasn't like that. You know, most of the guys, they worked out by raising a glass in the bar, you know, and did curls with a glass. But, I mean, but you know, the game has changed in the sense that the courses have become so much longer. It's become a power game. So you've got to, you know, you've got to be in great physical shape now to be able to swing in such a way as to produce that kind of power. Even though the major tenets of the swing haven't changed, the courses have gotten longer. And so it requires, you know, you to be able to hit the ball farther. And that you're going to have to work out, you know, and build up your body in order to keep up with the pace of the length of the golf courses today.
Is that a good thing, Larry? Because we were talking about where the state of the game is right now, and you were just, you know, mentioning that, you know, golf courses, they seem to be longer and longer.
Yeah. No, you know, Jack Nicklaus has lobbied for years, for decades, about having a standardized ball. Every other sport has they play with the same ball. Tennis, it's the same ball everyone uses. You know, basketball, football, you name it. But golf, you can use any ball you want. And some of these balls, the ball is the main reason that it's traveling so far now. It's partially the clubs, partially human evolution and workout routines. But the ball is a major contributor to the distance. And Nicklaus, like I said, for three or four decades has lobbied for, you know, having a standard ball that everyone plays, that's regulated and can't go past a certain distance. You know, and that would bring shot making back into the game the way I think it should be. Of course, I'm a traditionalist naturally, but you know, it's become a power game, and you can drive it almost anywhere as long as you have a short iron or wedge into the green and you can recover. But I'd like to see shot making brought back, and I agree with Jack Nicklaus. I think we should have a standardized ball, and you know, stop making these golf courses longer and longer and longer. They're going to run out of real estate.
Hey, you're listening to the familiar voice, PGA professional, author of his new book, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, one of our favorite guests that joins us each and every week right here at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. The great Larry Miller back with us tonight on this Friday. You know, you're talking about the power game, making courses perhaps not so long, using the same ball. But let's talk about, let's shift and talk some more about Dustin Johnson. Here he is, the world number one. Let's talk about pressure. How difficult is it to hold and keep that in place, to hold that number one position and to be the main guy, be the main man?
It's very difficult, you know, because you have to maintain that standard week after week or you start losing points. Other people catch up. And you know, it's amazing that the stretch that Tiger Woods had, you know, he remained number one for so long. And a couple of others, too. Nicholas did the same thing. Greg Norman for quite a while. But if you've seen recently, though, you've seen that the number one player has changed hands, you know, multiple times just in the last 2 or 3 years.
That's right.
And again, that's a reflection of the parity on the tour, and also of how many really good players there are. You know, 40 years ago, there were, you know, 5 or 8 great players. I mean, really elite players, if that. Now, you know, I mean, the number has expanded, and so you're seeing that they trade places. You know, one wins 1 week, the one the next, and then a couple of weeks later, somebody else is number one. And if you look at the points, they're so closely bunched that it doesn't take much slippage, you know, to lose that grip on number one in the world. But Dustin Johnson has the tools, though, and I also think he has the attitude and the emotional makeup to be able to hang on and keep performing at this standard. The guy's very low-key, phenomenal athlete. He works hard enough. And so, you know, he's got a pretty good chance to stretch this out and stay on top for quite a while.
Okay, so when you were on the PGA Tour, how did you handle pressure? I mean, how did you shake off a bogey or double bogeys during a round of golf so that you could mentally move forward and ultimately move up that leaderboard, Larry?
The only way you can do it is to absolutely stay in the process of what you're doing. It's the best way to handle pressure, because pressure happens when your mind is wandering into negative territory. You know, if you get one over par to start the round, you start thinking ahead, oh, where's the next par five where I can maybe make a birdie and catch up? You know, you can't do that. You're going to probably make a mistake, make another bogey. The only way to deal with the pressure is to stay totally, and it's a cliche by the sports psychologist, to stay in the present, but it's so true and it's very profound. And it's not enough just to stay in the present. You do that by adhering to your routine. It almost has to be ritualistic, almost like you have OCD. I mean, you have to do everything exactly the same in minute detail preparing to hit that shot. And if you do that, then you're engrossed in that, and your mind does not have time to wander into those negative thoughts.
Well, you know, and Larry, I've got to bring this up. There's a chapter in your book which is titled Hogan's Secrets of Concentration. And, you know, Ben Hogan, he truly epitomized the mantra of today's sports psychologists, as you were just talking about, staying in the present.
Yeah, and the way and Hogan's secrets of concentration were a couple of things. First of all, he formed a detailed game plan for each course, each round he was going to play. He mapped out where he intended to place his shots, and he did that in practice rounds. And he followed that game plan meticulously in detail, and he was like, at all times, he was engrossed in that game plan. He was consulting it all the time during the round. So he was concentrating on that. And once again, there you go. He didn't have, his mind was not able to wander into negative territory because it was totally immersed in his game plan. The second thing Hogan did was that he didn't speak to people. And there were two reasons for that. Well, first of all, he didn't want to be distracted. If someone would say something or start a conversation that would interest him, it would totally take him away from his little game plan book, and he would lose, you know, he would lose that process and lose the moment. But he wasn't rude. You know, if someone would say something or ask something, he may respond, but Hogan would not. And here's the key: Hogan would not extend the conversation.
Hey, the Players Championship is underway, and we are going one-on-one with Larry Miller, PGA professional and author of his new book, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. We've got to step aside for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show in hour number one. We are having a compelling conversation with Larry Miller, PGA professional and author of his new book, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. There's a chapter in your book which is titled Hogan's Secrets of Concentration. And, you know, Ben Hogan, he truly epitomized the mantra of today's sports psychologists, as you were just talking about, staying in the present.
Yeah, Hogan's secrets of concentration were, he was like, at all times, he was engrossed in that game plan. He was consulting it all the time during the round. So he was concentrating on that. And once again, there you go. He didn't have, his mind was not able to wander into negative territory because it was totally immersed in his game plan. The second thing Hogan did was that he didn't speak to people. And there were two reasons for that. Well, first of all, he didn't want to be distracted. If someone would say something or start a conversation that would interest him, it would totally take him away from his little game plan book, and he would lose, you know, he would lose that process and lose the moment. But he wasn't rude. You know, if someone would say something or ask something, he may respond. But Hogan would not, and here's the key, Hogan would not extend the conversation.
Hey, PGA professional author Larry Miller back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we are inside the ropes, and you're talking about insulating yourself as a golfer out on the course so that you have that sustained concentration. But also what's going to help your focus and concentration, you mentioned this in the book, is, of course, developing that pre-shot routine. So let's talk about the importance of that, because it is so vital to the success of your shot and vital to the success of upcoming shots.
You cannot swing consistently if you don't prepare consistently. And by preparing, I'm talking about when it's your time to play. That's when your pre-shot routine begins. And each person has to develop their own individual pre-shot routine that they're comfortable with, but it has to be detailed and it has to be ritualistic. It has to be repeatable exactly every time. And so that preparation to hit the shot enables you, if it's a consistent preparation, you've got a great chance to make a consistent swing. But if you have a random approach to hitting a shot, then you're going to swing randomly and you're going to be inconsistent and make wild swings. Mm-hmm. So it's extremely vital. And to prove it, just look at any tour player, any one of the 156 in the field, and each has their own specific pre-shot routine. I call it almost a dance into the shot because They never stop moving. It's a constant movement. It's a motion that leads right into the golf swing. Very, very important.
Well, and you know, Larry, it's one thing to have, you know, the mechanics of a good golf swing, but rhythm and tempo, can you, you know, expound on that? Because as I was saying, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but, you know, it is like shooting a free throw.
It is. Yeah, it is. It is. And the rhythm, yes, you get into a, you've heard the term getting into a rhythm.
Yes.
Well, you get into a rhythm by getting ready to perform. Like, if, you know, you'll see the basketball players bouncing the ball for the free throw. They bounce it. And I guarantee you the top shooters bounce it the exact number of times before they shoot. And so it's just like golf. The movements are the same. It's repeatable, almost ritualistic. And it's a rhythm to it that you get into a rhythm, and that rhythm leads right into the swing, and that rhythm feeds into the rhythm of your swing. And that's what tempo is all about. Good tempo is having a great rhythm to your swing. Unhurried, not jerky, smooth, graceful, flowing. You want to think of your swing in those terms, of smooth, graceful, flowing, kind of syrupy. You don't want a staccato, you know, bang-bang, jerky motion.
Right.
And so in golf and anything, look at, you know, like you're saying, free throw shooters, you know, or great three-point shooters or great jump shot shooters, you know, they have a great rhythm to what they're doing, and you can almost sense it. And it's a beautiful thing to watch when you watch a real artist perform it.
Well, and a pre-shot routine is a real savior when you're out on the course and perhaps you're having a day off. You're not in rhythm. You're not feeling that tempo. You just continue to go back to that pre-shot routine.
You have to stick with it no matter what, because it just becomes a part of you. And if you stray from it, then you're going to get into an endless loop of Band-Aid fixes. You know, I asked Scott McCarron one time, a really top player who's won numerous times on the PGA Tour and the Champions Tour, about his pre-shot routine, and he told me that was all he worked on. And I said, Scott, what happens on a day when you grab the club and your grip doesn't feel right and your takeaway doesn't feel right? I said, don't you work on that? He said, no. No, I do not. He said, because if I shot 67 yesterday and I don't feel good today and nothing feels right, I'm not going to change my mechanics because I know it works. It's just a bad day. And I said, well, what do? He said, I just work on my routine. And he said, if I do that, then odds are after the bad round, I'll come back with another great round. But if I keep changing things, then I'm going to get lost in a myriad of fixes.
You know, Larry, I also wanted to bring up tonight the importance of, talking about how when Ben Hogan practiced, he just didn't hit ball after ball. I mean, every single shot, he valued it, it mattered, and he would visualize, particular situations on the course and what would call, what would command, that type of shot that needed to be made. And so that's one of the things, there's 5 years between our boys. I can see how our oldest son, he's matured and he does take his time. By my 10-year-old, it's kind of rapid fire, and I'm like, hey, we got to slow down.
Well, Tommy Bolt told me that Hogan would, when he practiced, that he would visualize he's on the last hole of the U.S. Open, tied for the lead, got 10,000 people around, and he would try to visualize that scene in his mind.
Wow.
While he was hitting a shot on the range, and he would try to replicate that pressure and that arena that he might face while he was practicing. And he said the better he got at visualizing that, then he began to be able to deal with that when it actually presented itself.
Hey, Larry Miller has been with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, PGA professional and author. You got to go out and get a copy of his new book. It is titled Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. And you can go anywhere online and get a copy of it. Of course, we've got it posted on my Twitter feed, and that is at E Radio Sports. Always a true pleasure to visit with Mr. Larry Miller. We'll talk next week. Okay, Larry?
It was great. Great talk. Thank you.
Absolutely. Much more coming your way right here at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You stay close. Bill Rozinski in hour number 2, Sirius XM PGA Tour Radio.